Is this me? Am I supposed to say something? Oh, yeah, I am, aren't I? All right, cool. All right, let's get started. How are we going, Kai?
Yeah, really good. Lots happening in the media today, this week, and, you know, plenty to talk about. So very, very keen to get right into it.
Did you see Jeff Bezos resigned?
Yes, that's a pretty big move, isn't it?
I haven't read into it because it happened yesterday, I think, at the time of recording. But I don't even know. It's a weird time to resign.
Yeah, well, I think their share price is doing pretty well. So I think they've strategically chosen this time to announce it. And it's quite bizarre. I mean, it's been, 25 years since he started at Amazon, and this is the first time he stepped down. That being said, I don't think the finance analysts are ruling out a return if Amazon doesn't do well post his departure. So it's similar to Apple, how Steve Jobs came back to Apple after a short hiatus.
Yeah, well, the rumors I heard briefly around the proverbial water cooler, because we're all still working from home, is apparently he's stepped down to put a bit more focus on his space venture. I forgot what it's called, but it creates an interesting situation where we've got one rich man called Elon Musk trying to, get to space, and we have another rich man called Jeff Bezos also trying to get to space. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll end up being some sort of boxing fight to see who'll get further first.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. You have seen a little bit of virtual or Twitter kind of battles that go on between the two of them over the years with, I think...
Oh, do they not get along?
Well, no, I think it's the space race. I think, Bezos' company is called Blue Origins. And so...
Sounds like a coffee company.
And so they, I think when they first, when they first achieve reusable rockets, they celebrated as you would. It's still a pretty big achievement, even if you're number two. But then Elon just rebutted on Twitter that they didn't. It wasn't very impressive. So it was quite interesting to see two of the world's richest men go at each other on Twitter.
Men, egotists, self-centered people. They're probably two of the most. I don't admire either of them very much, to be honest, on a personal level. But anyway. That is what it is. So we should probably get straight stuck into it. So let's start this episode with some quick clickback from last week. So last week we covered the WhatsApp privacy debacle, and I think we both mentioned that WhatsApp is still maintaining its end-to-end encryption. So, largely a lot of the concerns around Facebook and WhatsApp by extension, getting access to your messages were largely unfounded. Lex actually reached out to us to just clarify that is the case, but only for consumer-to-consumer personal messages. So, like, Kai, when I message you, our message is still encrypted under Facebook's future privacy policy. But, if you're messaging a business, then it's not end-to-end encrypted due to the sort of needs that they need on a business end to sort of have someone or multiple people have visibility over what you're saying or whatever your inquiry is so they can actually service your needs. So that is a good point of clarification. I think that gets to the point that you said last week around most of the changes to the policies were more around that B2B or B2C sort of context rather than private citizens messaging each other.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. I mean, when you jump on a company's website and you use their live chat function on your browser, all of that's not encrypted. And a bit of life pro tip is that most of these programs, when you're typing, even if you haven't entered, what you want to say to the person on the other side, they can actually read that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense now in hindsight, now that I think about the sort of customer service I get. But yeah, no, like I've been on the other side of this as well, but I've never seen unsent messages come through before, but it is quite funny because once we had five team members looking at one chat ticket that was live and just laughing at what was going on because there were some of the most ridiculous questions you've ever heard, and you can have your own chat alongside that chat, but it's all attached to that chat.
Yes,
like it's so like support is like, oh hey, at Kai, what should we do about this question or whatnot? But ours was clearly not so much about helping them than ridiculing them. But, that's just a little bit of insight into customer service and how not great it is.
Yeah, and I think, not encrypting the business end of the service makes sense given that you do need a paper trail. You do need other people in the business to be able to follow up and see what was said what was agreed to be able to deliver that customer, you know, experience that they wish to do. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah. The only question I had from that was, can WhatsApp and by extension Facebook take that messaging data and use it to feed into their ad algorithms? I'm not sure. I'm not saying they do. I'm not saying they don't. It's a question that I probably should have looked into before we hit record, but maybe someone will get back to us next week, or maybe one of us should actually do our homework.
Maybe. Moving on.
All right, GameStop. GameStop, GameStock, Stonks, GameStop. Stock market, Robinhood. All right, Kai, what's going on?
How bizarre. Like, you know, if you've dabbled enough in investing as a retail customer, you would know that retail customers are always the last ones to know things, and they're effectively that, you know, you're scraping off the bottom of a barrel, right? It's always the institutional investors that kind of gets the inside advantage to investing. And so this is an event where the retail investors effectively outplayed the institutional investors, the hedge funds, and that was very bizarre for that to happen. So effectively what happened was a bunch of Reddit users decided to go against the grain and decided to buy a lot of GameStop shares, which sent it sent it skyrocketing up to, you know, $200 from a very low price.
I think it was like $3.
Yeah, and that's right. And on the other side of that equation, we had institutional investors shorting that stock. And what that means is they effectively sold shares that they don't own with the intention that it will go down so they can buy it back and return those shares to whoever they borrowed it from. So you effectively short a stock if you think it's going to go down, right?
Yep. So they're betting. So it's like going to the casino and betting that someone's going to lose.
Yes. Effectively, that's it. And so it's bizarre. Well, you know, it's not easy to move markets, right? Even institutional investors with their billions of dollars under management, it's hard for any one player to decide that, you know, they can buy enough stock that actually moves the market without kind of triggering a takeover, right? But effectively what the Redditors managed to do is create this crowdthink to buy enough of these shares, which sent it skyrocketing, and at the same time put a lot of a lot of the hedge funds out of business, right? I think one hedge fund was exposed to, I think, about $2.6 billion that they had to fork out to buy back the shares that they've sold to give it back to whoever they borrowed it from. And so that was a very bizarre turn of events.
Yeah, and GameStop as a business, like, for those who don't know, and I only found out recently listening to what was going on, they're essentially like the EB Games, I think, in America, that they're, you know, they're bricks and mortar and they sell physical copies or discs of video games. And so, you know, as we spoke about, you know, a couple episodes, if you guys cared to listen, the latest generation of consoles, you know, more and more things are moving to digital. People aren't buying discs as much anymore. Sure, there's still a thing, but I'd imagine in 5-10 years, they're going to be continue to be phased out. So the business model of GameStop in its current form probably wasn't that sustainable. And so in terms of, you know, future outlook, it didn't make any financial sense for its stock price to be going up, and it actually didn't make sense for any of these Redditors to actually be investing money into it, because for all intents and purposes, it didn't look like it was a business or a stock that had any sort of upward prospect to it.
Yeah, that's right. So effectively, there's no fundamentals behind this search, right? It's purely speculation. It's a gamble, right? So it's... it's dangerous for these sorts of volatility, because there's only one way for GameStop for shares like GameStop to go, once these kind of hype dies down, or once these Redditors who hold, you know, a lot of shares decide to sell out, right? And when that happens, then there's only one way to go, and I think they've already started kind of tanking. And GameStop's not the only stock that they decided to effectively, you know, speculate on. The other one was AMC, which I believe is a chain of cinemas in the US. Again, because of COVID, because of, you know, alternatives like Netflix, these sort of kind of, you know, legacy entertainment venues, it makes sense from a fundamental perspective for the shares to go down, right? But again, it's the Redditors that have brought the share price up.
I think that's why they got targeted, right? I think this whole thing was sort of Redditors being upset with Wall Street and the way and how people make money off the stock market in a traditional sense. And so I guess these businesses were intentionally selected in that, like, that made no sense for them to be going up in price, but if you get enough people buying it, you can actually, I don't want to use the word manipulate the market because that has specific connotations to it, but you can, you know, change what the market is doing and very much change what they call intrinsically the value of a stock, even though there is no value to that particular asset.
Yeah, that's right. And the irony is a lot of these retail traders are using a platform called Robinhood, which is, you know, it's meant to be an easy way for millennials to invest in the stock market. It's meant to be super cheap. I think it's a $0 brokerage platform.
Yeah. I think they're all $0 now in the States.
Yeah, that's right. So they all went through that platform to trade. And the irony is that when all this happened, Robinhood effectively stopped them, their ability to trade or buy more stocks. And, you know, the Redditors naturally dug deeper to find out that actually Robinhood is heavily influenced. I don't think they're owned.
Aren't they financially backed by them?
I think
them?
They're financially
by, like,
backed.
A giant hedge
yes,
fund?
That's right. So I think they're either financially backed by a giant hedge fund or a lot of institutional investors channel their trade volumes through them as well. So they form a pretty big revenue stream for Robinhood. And so they were pressured into stopping these retail investors in trading in GameStop and AMC and, you know, whatever the likes. And so that's the irony in the name of Robinhood, given that they are stealing from the poor to give to the rich.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I didn't pick up on that. But yeah, fundamentally, like, the institutional investors are saying this business, you know, if you think about it, has no upward prospect. We think its share price will continue to go down. So, like you said, they short it. Then these Redditors come in and, you know, just by sheer volume, drive the price up. And so these investors that have influence over Robinhood, and I don't think it was just Robinhood, there were other platforms as well. The rumors are that they essentially leaned on them to say, stop, don't let them buy, because this is putting our position at risk and we're going to lose a butt ton of money. But the official stance that Robinhood and these other platforms are putting out is something to do with liquidity requirements that they need to have based, I think it's a SEC or whatever financial regulator is in the States, but not going to get into that, to be honest. We're not financial experts, even though Kai's now in the fintech sector. Look at him. I've spent the last 10 minutes listening to him thinking he's an expert. But to be honest, not to spook our competitors, but the latest episode of The Vergecast gives a really great rundown. It's a bit long, but a great rundown in, you know, normal speak language that you can actually understand. But caveat, you're going to have to wait through about 30 minutes of ads just to get to it. But if you want a better rundown, head there, because we're not really experts in this space. We just thought we'd mention it because it's been the latest hot topic of the week. So Tesla's released an update to the Model S, the car, I think it was the first real mass market vehicle that they brought. I think they had the Roadster before that, didn't they, Kai?
Yes, they did. But it wasn't, I don't think it was manufactured by them. I think it was just a retrofitted Lotus, wasn't it? Their original Roadster.
Yes, I told you, the whole company is a sham. Anyway, I think within the last week, they introduced, I guess, some minor or major changes, I actually don't really know, to the Model S as well as the Model X, which is, I think, built off the same chassis and is fundamentally, I think, the same car. It's just got a different sort of frame to it. But I might hand this over to you, Kai, because you're the resident Tesla fanboy, to let us know what's changed and why you're going to say I should go out and buy one.
Sure thing. Yeah, so pretty big changes, but mostly interior, on both sense of the interior where you actually touch and feel where you're inside the car, but also interior in the sense of... Well, for the lack of a better word, it's under the bonnet, even though there isn't a bonnet in EVs.
There's a bonnet. There's no engine.
There's no engine. That's right. So yeah, from the interior perspective, they've made quite significant changes. So the middle dashboard that used to be this vertical massive screen is now horizontal, very, very similar to the Model 3.
Groundbreaking.
They've kept the dashboard though, so that's the one difference between the Model S and the Model 3 is that the Model S has the dashboard, so it's not as awkward when you're trying to check your speed.
Still find it ridiculous that the Model 3 doesn't have an instrument cluster. Like, you have to look away from the road to check how fast you're going and probably in the process die. But anyway, it's good that they kept it on the Model S.
It is pretty bizarre that Model 3 doesn't have it. Yeah, so they've changed the interior on that front. And I think the most controversial change is the steering wheel. So it's no longer a...
It's not a wheel
it's
anymore.
It's not a wheel anymore. And I'm not actually sure if it's legal yet. I think... I don't know if there are fast regulations on that. But effectively, I don't even know how to describe this. It looks like something out of Star Trek, right? It looks like you're in an air shuttle of sorts and you have a steering wheel to kind of direct your plane, and that's what it looks like. It's like a rectangular kind of don't know how to how would you describe it, Steve?
Well, the sort I think of it two ways. One is think of a normal steering wheel that got the top cut off. That's kind of what it is. Or think of it like a plane. You know how they have like their steering wheel, but it's basically just like a flat panel with two things on the left and the right, but it has a bottom to it. So either way, it's kind of like a U rather than an O as a wheel. So it's a bit weird. It does feel like something from the future, yeah, which is probably what they were trying to do with it, because they're still charging a ridiculous sum for that car.
That's right.
Yeah, that's probably how I'd summarize it.
That's a good way. Yeah, so think of a full square steering wheel and then half that, and that's what you kind of have. Right,
it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
it's a very bizarre move. I wonder if it will actually get productionized.
Well, get this, they've also gotten rid of the stalks as well. It's not just the wheel.
Yeah, that's right. It's they've gotten rid of the stalk, which is very interesting.
No, not the stalk, both stalks. There are no stalks.
Oh yeah,
to indicate you use these weird touch things on the wheel. No, not the wheel, the steering thing.
Yeah, also very controversial. And I wonder if they've started kind of expediting their designs for the new Roadster down to the Model S already.
Potentially.
I think that was the original Roadster design with the steering wheel.
I haven't followed them that closely. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the company.
So that's probably the most controversial changes internally. There's some pretty nifty but not essential features like the gaming system.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's matching the PS5 now. In terms of
they basically stuck a PlayStation into a car.
Yeah, basically. So that's the changes. And then further into the car specs, they've made pretty big changes to the engine as well.
Yeah. Well, it's not an engine.
Yeah, it's not an engine. Right. The motor, I think, is the right way to put it.
Yeah, that's it.
So how they've positioned it is they've gotten rid of the Model S performance. So if you can remember, the performance... So before this announcement, they had two versions, right? They had the long range and the performance, where...
In Australia, by the way,
In Australia.
Because I think it's different in the States.
Yes, that's right. In the States, I think they still had the standard range, which was a bit cheaper. But yes, you're right. So in Australia, there were only two versions. You had the long range and the performance. They were fundamentally the same car, I think, except that long range was... it wasn't as quick. So from a hardware perspective, they both had two motors. I think the batteries were very similar. It's just long range was probably more constrained in terms of how fast it can go, so that it can go with a longer range. That was my understanding of it.
I thought the long range still had a shorter range than the performance, ironically.
Don't think so.
We should double check that, because maybe I'm thinking about the Model 3, but I'm pretty sure, because the long range was called the long range, because that was in comparison to their standard model. I think the performance has a longer range than the long range, though, ironically.
Right.
Double check. Fact check me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was a trade-off because otherwise I wouldn't have even thought about the long range. when I was considering.
Well, buying a Tesla is a whole trade-off in itself. But, yes. Yeah.
All right, moving on. So previously they had the long range and they had the standard, and the performance, which both had two motors, which is why they're so quick. They've gotten rid of the performance now and are instead offering the Plaid and the Plaid Plus. Is that how you say it? Plaid? Plaid?
I think it's Plaid. 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 Someone feel free to write in and tell us how to say it.
Yes. So they're offering the Plaid and the Plaid Plus. And the difference between the Plaid and the performance is that this has three motors instead of two, right? And so that brings up the 0 to 100 speed to 2.1 seconds. I think it was about 2.
I mean, it brings down the speed.
Well, yeah, it brings up the power, brings down the speed.
Brings down the time.
Yeah, yep. Brings down the time to about 2.1 seconds. I think it was about 2.6 or 2.5 seconds before that. So it was really ridiculously fast, right? But yes, so the Plaid is faster now. It's got about 1,000 horsepowers. And that comes in with a drive-away price of about 215 grand in Australia.
Holy moly.
To put that in comparison, I think the performance was about 180.
So they've actually upped the price.
Yes. And that is because they've added in a motor. And that's about right. If you compare the Model 3 between the standard and the performance, you get an extra motor that you added about 30 grand. So that's kind of the ballpark kind of economics behind the car.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the configurator right now. The long range dual motor, 155k drive away. The Plaid, 216k drive away. That's a lot of money. But then that's not where it ends. Go on, you keep going.
Yes, and then it goes up to a Plaid Plus, which is even faster. They're not telling you how much faster. They're saying it's less than 2.1 seconds.
It's because that whole organization is bullshit, but anyway.
And it's a longer range. So the Plaid has...
See, I told you!
No, so hear me out. So the Plaid has 628 Ks of range, stated range, whereas the Plaid Plus has 837 Ks. It's a lot more and it's a lot quicker. And if you believe the other speculations going around the tech world, is that this Plaid Plus is effectively the new Roadster, but in a Model S body. So they're using the new tech.
Yes, I've heard that rumor as well.
That's right. So they're using the new tech, the new batteries, potentially in this model already. So it would be interesting. You know, you're getting effectively front row seats to the Roadster if you wanted to, you know, check out the power and the distance as well. The Plaid Plus comes in at 240, so it's another 30k, but you are getting a different battery, I'm assuming, given that you get another 200k's of range.
Yeah, because I think fundamentally they're both tri-motor vehicles, right? Sure, they could be different motors, but you're right in that they got more range out of the same number of motors, and I'm assuming the same surface area of batteries. So you're probably right in that, you know, for those who have been, who've joined us since episode 3, where we covered Tesla Battery Day and what their new battery technology would be, that does make sense in that how they managed to get, an extra 200Ks of range, which is like 33% through just batteries, which would make sense. That's a lot.
That is a lot. It is pretty concerning, though, to give normal motorists that kind of power. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, if you drive that, I'm not driving anymore. I've seen you drive. You almost knocked me off the road once.
2.1 seconds, Steve. You wouldn't even see me coming by.
Look, let me put it this way. 2.1 seconds, not many people... someone's going to call me, say I'm poor shaming people, but not many people can afford a $238,000 car.
Yes.
That's going to price most of them. Let alone that one. Like, the long range, not many people can afford $155,000 car. Like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's right. It's not in the hands of everyone. And, you know, still pretty amazing to be able to buy a production car online in a couple of clicks that will drive 2.1 seconds, though.
Delivery time, 2022.
Yeah, so that's the other interesting thing that I wanted to talk about, because they're not selling the existing or the recently predated ones. anymore. So it doesn't look like you can actually buy a Model S anymore until 2022.
To be honest, I don't think their Model S sales have been setting the world on fire anyway. Since the Model 3 came out, like, Model S sales, I think, went through the floor. Like, it's there as a halo, as a halo product now.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I can't remember the exact figures, but most sales have skewed towards the 3 and the Y since those came out.
Yeah, which makes sense because they're like half the price. Well, maybe a little bit more, but yeah, like they're much cheaper. This thing is like most people will never be able to buy a car that expensive.
Yeah.
The reality is like that's crazy. $155,000 for a car. People can barely save for a house, let alone buy a car like this. Well, it's interesting because now this is on a set off a whole another kettle of fish, but these are then technically faster than the Porsche Taycan. Is that how you say it?
Taycan, yeah. Taycan?
No, I think it's Taycan. Because I remember it's the first half is not how you think you say it, and the back half is how you think you say it.
Right. Sure.
Anyway, but apparently it's faster than the Taycan, which, like, I bet, to be honest, this whole tri-motor thing wasn't in the works until Elon saw what the Taycan could do, and then it was like, we need to fix this.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that, to be honest, because the moment I think Taycan came out and, you know, did their rounds around the track, they pretty shortly after introduced the plate model. I didn't think it was going to be available that widely. I thought it was just going to be like an enthusiast kind of offering. But no, they've just taken away performance and put that in instead.
Yeah, I thought the plaid model would sit above performance. You'd have long range performance for, I guess, the more moderate cost price point. But
that's what I thought as well.
I guess it didn't make sense to them because they're not, this isn't like, they're not really at scale for the Model S, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, there's not enough people buying them.
Yeah.
The other thought I had about the steering wheel, sorry to go back to it and how ridiculous it is, I have a little conspiracy theory here that I'm going to sort of sow the seeds for, and hopefully it will go viral on Twitter. I bet Johnny Ive, now that he's left Apple, is now working for Tesla, and he's been working on that stupid steering wheel. And he's just been crossing things out and removing things for the sake of it, just like he was doing at Apple in the last 5 years. We don't need a headphone jack. Let's delete that. Or we don't need indicator stalks. Let's delete that. Oh, the top of the steering wheel. Nah, that gets in the way. Let's just delete that as well. So, look, the next thing you're going to have in a Model S, you're not going to have seats in there or something, I bet.
There's a lot to unpack in that statement, Steve.
Nah, that's my theory. Johnny Ive is now at Tesla. Heard it here first on ClickCast, 4th of February. Yeah, so Google and Facebook are apparently having beef with our lovely federal government. So apparently they've gotten into some beef about some new mandatory media bargaining code that essentially forces, that will force Google and Facebook and other internet platforms to pay Australian media outlet for linking and I think publicizing their news. But Kai, I think you've got a bit of deeper understanding to this.
Yes. So that you know, what you've just said effectively captured the crux of it. Effectively, you know, if you think about it, traditionally, these news media companies, they rely heavily on ad revenues to sustain themselves. A lot of that revenue has obviously gone into your social media giants like Google and Facebook. So they're struggling, and governments around the world is actually stepping in to try to kind of regulate this space and try to you know, make it a bit more viable for these media companies to survive. And it's interesting because this isn't the first instance that this has happened. So I'm going to get the countries wrong, but I believe Spain has tried to do it. And, you know, in a similar vein of trying to get the social media companies to pay. And Google has decided to pull out, not the entire operations, but just the news, part of their business. So I think what they did is just, they just no longer cited news in their coverage, right?
Well, they haven't pulled the plug officially. I think they did an experiment where for some users they stopped linking and I think providing publicity, for lack of a better word, to Australian media outlets. But I think that only affected, they quote, 1% of users, knowing Google, who, by the way, much like Facebook, are also an evil organization.
Yeah. So this was in Spain that they pulled out completely.
Oh, they pulled out in Spain. Yeah. Oh,
so
all right.
In Spain, right. They pulled out. And then in Italy, they negotiated a deal to actually pay the media right? So this feels like they've decided we can't just keep making deals like this. So it feels like Australia just came in at the wrong time and they're like, we need to make a stance. And so they went as drastic as we're going to pull out completely out of Australia.
Well, the funny thing is, so if Google pulls out, like, the reality is there's no other search engines out there. Like, there's Bing, which sucks. There's DuckDuckGo, which, well, I've never actually used before, so I withhold judgment. But, like, there's no other search engines.
No, no. And
doesn't mean there won't be another one, but, you know.
That's right. And Bing's kind of come in and stepped up. Well, they're keen to step up. So they've been, you know, Microsoft has been in ScoMo's ears and we can do it. We can do it. But yeah, have you used Bing, Steve?
I've used it by accident on when I think it's a default for Microsoft Edge or Internet Explorer or whatever the client is.
Yeah.
It's a web browser, but it's not very good.
No, it's not very intuitive. It's not as predictive as Google is. Like Google, you can just throw words at it and it'll find exactly what you need, right? Whereas Bing's not as intuitive and it's just not as good. I've had to use it when I was in China and the VPNs weren't working. So Bing was my only option.
Well, the interesting thing is, if we get back to the Google point, right, is that so what the government's proposing is Google needs to pay, like, let's say I'm the Herald Sun, right? Google needs to pay the Herald Sun to link their articles and news on their search engine or their Google News platform, right? That makes no sense. I know I said Google and Facebook are evil organizations, but that makes no sense.
So here's the two school of thoughts, right? From Google's perspective, they are showing links and showing news, but to get a deeper dive, you click on the link and you go to the actual news media's website, right? And in that sense, there's ad revenues that can be generated through those sites. There's probably a bit more of a nuanced considerations around these news media probably had to buy the keywords as well to appear as first links, maybe. I don't know. So maybe the economics isn't stacking up that way. And then the flip side of that argument is they're struggling from this well, when I say they, the news media outlets, they're struggling from these massive drop in revenue. So they do need an outlet a more solid revenue stream.
But that's their fault. Like, Google shouldn't be forced to shouldn't be punished for that. Like, their business model is being challenged, and rather than evolving their business model, they're attacking other business models.
Yeah, look, it's not as direct as who's right and wrong, right? It's just, I think effectively these news media outlets are trying to survive, and they're doing anything they can, because the reality is no one's really paying for the news anymore, right? Like,
well, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So it's interesting to see how this will play out, because Google's made such a strong stance in that, well, all right, we'll pull out. And that's a pretty big call, right? Like, it's a pretty big call for us as a nation, not so much for Google. I think we only make up less than like 3% of their revenues, right?
So I was going to say, we like to think we're the center of the world, but Australia is this teeny tiny, yeah. Well, actually it's really big, but teeny tiny island nation at the bottom of the world that in reality no one really cares about.
That's right. 3% or 4%, I think, was the revenues that we bring into Google. So it's not much.
Yeah.
But I'd just be keen to see how this will pan out, because both sides are quite stubborn. So ScoMo's come in and said, oh, we don't negotiate. We're not going to back down. But apparently he's talking to Google CEO, I think Sundar Pichai.
Yeah, I think I saw that as well today.
Yeah, that's right. So, it's be interesting to see this unfold. I don't think Australia is going to let Google exit. But yeah.
Do it. I dare you.
It'd be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Well, they've been very, like you said, that Google and Facebook have been really public in fighting this bargaining code. Like, I think it was a week ago, Google had these things plastered at the top of their search engine every time you look for something saying, Google is going to leave. And I think the head of Google in Australia actually posted some weird video where she, it was a bit ridiculous and trying to like woo people over. But the fact is, no one likes the government. That's a fact. But no one likes Google or Facebook either. Like, they're not going to win this war. Like, the fact is, in the world of public opinion, sure, both sides aren't highly regarded, but no one likes Google and no one likes Facebook. And I'd assume that the dislike for them is almost stronger than the dislike for our federal government. So I don't think they're going to win in that court of public opinion.
Yeah, so you're right, I think, in that no one likes the government, but also no one likes Facebook or Google. But the reality is we are also reliant on a giant like Google. You know, think about all the Android users. Think about...
I don't want to think about them.
Think about the less tech savvy part of the of our demographic. They only know Google, right? So this is going to cause chaos for Australia if they do pull out, and that's going to be top of mind for the government when they're reaching out to negotiate.
I don't know. I feel like the government has a stronger hand here. Like, Google's the organization stuck between a rock and a hard place now, right? Like you said, Spain and Italy have made moves already. The rest of the world is still trying to grapple with a world where Facebook and Google and all these tech giants basically control the world's commerce. What they do now will dictate what happens next. So if they give in, that sets precedent for the rest of the world. If they withdraw, then that also sets precedent for the rest of the world. And under both scenarios, I don't see them winning. Like, if they pull out of Australia, then other countries will be like, all right, leave then. And they can't leave, they can't pull out of every country.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be that drastic. I think the middle ground's probably going to be closer to what's happening in Europe, where they just stop citing news, right? They're like, well, you want to get paid? Fine. Well, we just won't do it. And then no one wins from this. You stop getting links into your news channels and we don't have to pay you.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting thing to see how this pans out. I don't know which way it's going to go. I think it's going to drag on for probably another 6 to 12 months. It'll probably get messier before it gets any better, to be honest. Especially in the way that Google and Facebook have been so public about, like, even Facebook has been quite invasive, I think, in their lobbying on, obviously, their social media platform in trying to, I guess, convince, everyday consumers that the government is wrong in this case and that Google... But the fact is, Google makes so much money from this, they can afford to pay for it.
Yeah, but you also don't want everyone nipping at your toes, right?
Anyway, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how this goes. If I had to put money on it, I don't think Google will pull out. I think it'll be some sort of compromise deal where Google still has to pay, but it'll probably be at some lower rate or something that, yeah, we'll see how it pans out. But that's where I would put my money right now in terms of where we'll head.
That's right. I don't think Google's going to pull out. Oh, I hope I don't have to go to Bing. But yeah, I don't think Google's going to pull out. I think they'll reach some sort of agreement. But yeah, I think there's two sides to this coin that are just as valid. These editors and writers and reporters and journalists, they need to get paid, whether it's through Google or somewhere else. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that pans out.
Well, the reality is we've seen in the States how important news, like trustworthy news outlets are, right? I would rather let Google withdraw from the country than have our news outlets fail and be left with the Herald Sun as, like, the trusted source of news. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I would rather let Google pull out, because that fundamentally, as we've seen in the States, undermines the democracy that we live in.
Yeah. All right. So let's play that out. So if Google leaves, right?
Bing steps in. DuckDuckGo steps in. Like, it probably won't be as monopolized. We'll probably be, two or three large search engines. It won't be like the 95% market share that Google currently has, I think, ballpark.
Yeah. Which is fair, but from these news media outlets' perspective, will they actually get a higher revenue stream or generate higher revenues if this outcome actually happened?
Well, see, it's because at the end of the day, if you try and tie it back to how this will actually influence how the news reader gets the news, it's not going to change it, right? Let's assume Microsoft or whoever the search engines are agree to pay the news outlets for linking their news articles and their content, essentially. As a consumer, you're still going to keep looking for news on Bing or Bing News or Facebook or whatever these platforms are. And so assuming it's the same level of traffic, I don't know. It feels like to me is that, like, the total pie, the size of the pie isn't changing. It's how are we cutting it now, right?
Mm-hmm.
All this advertising revenue, arguably Google has grown the size of the pie through obviously SEO and search engine based marketing and whatever they do, which has always complemented the traditional marketing that these news outlets normally have. So that's growing the pie. But now I think the pie has gotten to a point where any growth is going to be marginal. It's how can the news outlets get a share or some component of what these aggregators have managed to grow the pie by. And if at the end of the day, I think I'm not sure who holds more power between them. I'm not sure. I'm trying to play this out of my mind. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I think, yeah, it could work out. Like, this could go both ways. So it just very much depends on what's happening behind those closed doors.
All right, let's end that there. This week's episode of ClickCast is brought to you by our 97 followers on Twitter. If you'd like to join in on the fun and make that triple digits for us, hit subscribe and follow on Twitter at ClickCastFM. We'll talk to you guys next week. See yous.